Ready, Jennifer?
Notice it's like school that nobody ever wants to sit in the front row.
Yeah.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah.
Okay. Good afternoon, welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for March 4th. Can't believe it's March. Ready. Time flies when you're having fun, committee members. We have a little bit of a rearrangement on the schedule today. We're going to open with a public hearing on Senate Bill 248, since we only have two people signed up for that. Then we'll hear Senate Bill 425, and then the reason that Senate Bill 571 is up for reconsideration is because there was a looks, I don't know if I should say mistake, but we needed to reissue the. Actually, we could do that first, right?
Do you want to do it just three years?
Yeah, sure. We'll just excuse Senator Haas. So actually, let's just get this order of business over. I will open up a work session, reconsideration and work session for Senate Bill 571.
Chair Dingfelder, I move we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 571 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 571 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Beth, can you give us an explanation of why this is up in front of the committee again, and then we'll see if there's any discussion.
So, Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 571, which is a reminder, adds a state marine director or a designated representative and one appointed member to the Invasive Species Council. No fiscal statement had been issued on the bill, and that was what was in front of you while you voted on the bill. During the hearing, additional information was submitted to Legislative Fiscal Office, and while we were in hearing, they issued an additional fiscal on it or rescinded that one and gave us a minimal fiscal impact. So we brought it back to committee so that you have all of the information in front of you. So there's a minimal fiscal impact on Senate Bill 571.
Okay, so is there any discussion about that? I just want to make sure everyone understands why that's, and it did pass out of this committee in a 5-0 vote initially. And then this requires majority, so we're still majority. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so no further discussion. Is there any objections to the motion? Seeing none, the motion is once again before the committee.
Chair Dingfelder, I move Senate Bill 571 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 571 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes. And who was carrying it initially?
Senator Haas was.
I think so. Okay, so Senator Haas, especially because he's not here, will carry that bill again. And he is excused. Please note, oh, it was me. Okay. All right.
Oh.
Maybe we should make Senator Haas carry it. Actually, I think I will. Can we change the carrier since it was sent back to the committee?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So note for the record that Senator Haas will carry that, and he is excused along with Senator Bates from that vote. And with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 571. We'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 248. And Beth, if you can explain that to us, please.
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 248 increases the amount of service charge and user charges collected for solid waste disposal that may be set aside by local governments for rehabilitation and enhancement of area around disposal site to $10. There is a Dash 1 amendment in front of you on OLIS and in the back of the room that restores the amount authorized to be set aside to $1, then creates a new section which establishes that a local government operating a disposal site to set aside a portion of the service and user charges not to exceed $10 for each ton of solid waste for rehabilitation of the area around the disposal site if the money will also benefit development and infrastructure needs of regionally significant industrial area.
Okay, we have Commissioner Faye Stewart signed up and Alex Kyler, who's Lane County staff, and I think they're going to explain to us why this bill is needed or what problem this bill fixes. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming up. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder and commission members, my name is Faye Stewart. I'm the East Lane County Commissioner, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak to Senate Bill 248. As the East Lane County Commissioner, the area that this bill would affect is Goshen, which is an area that I represent. And it also, close by Goshen, is our landfill site, the Shore Mountain landfill site. And currently, Lane County has been hit with financial difficulties, with the loss of the secure rural school payments. A great deal amount of that money came to our roads department. And we in Lane County are looking at ways to be able to help improve our economic opportunities and bring revenues into Lane County. One of the ways to do that is to transform our Goshen area into, it currently has 300 acres of industrial land, and it is underutilized. And what we've attempted to do is make that site available for redevelopment, and it has larger parcels, which would be potentially conducive for new development in this area. One of the ways that this bill would help is because of the proximity of our Short Mountain landfill and Goshen, we could use this potential fee in helping us address two areas that may be an issue in the future in this area, would be a transportation and also sanitation needs. Presently, right now, Lane County, to get to Short Mountain, virtually all the waste must be hauled down Highway 99, which goes right through Goshen. The only amount of waste that doesn't has to can get off at a single off ramp off of a I-5 from coming north from Cottage Grove and Crestwell. The remainder of the waste must go through Goshen, and so this is available for Lane County as a tool, we could increase the tipping fee to have money available for matching if we can find some money to help us upgrade that interchange or possibly use the resources to help in addressing sanitation needs for Goshen redevelopment. And also it would help us with our sanitation needs at the landfill, because presently right now we truck all that leachate is what we call it to the metro system in Eugene. So this bill would help us to stock up the money to be able to address these issues in the future. This is Goshen, and this redevelopment is a number one priority of Lane County in looking and making developable land available for industry and also helping improve our economic development. I'll let Mr. Kyler speak to the rest of the items on there, but thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chairman Dingfelder, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. Senate Bill 248 addresses a particular statute that does provide local governments with the ability to apportion money that they earn from their tipping fees into what are called improvements or enhancements around a disposal site. We initially drafted the bill just to increase from up to $1 per ton, which was in statute since 1986, to change that to up to $10 per ton to try to be more reflective of the needs that we had in Lane County. That was how the bill was initially drafted. Coming up to Salem and getting some additional feedback from other stakeholders, we decided to narrow the scope of the bill to try to address a particular need in Lane County, and it was just a natural fit with the regionally significant industrial area designation that we've already gotten for Goshen. That RSIA, what we call an RSIA, came out of the passage of Senate Bill 766 from last session, which was really sort of the legislature's one methodology of really improving the land use processes around industrial sites. So this, in a county like Lane, where economic development is a big priority of ours, but we're very strapped for resources. We're in fact a severe decline in resources. This provides an opportunity for us to focus on specific economic development activities through what would be a temporary use of these dollars. The RSIA designation is something that lasts for 10 years, and you can see in the dash one, we put language in there to suggest that if there were an actual tipping fee increase as a result of this bill, that tipping fee increase would actually have to go away at the end of the RSIA designation, which is 10 years in statute. The idea of using dollars for improvements and enhancement around a landfill, I think, is sort of an intriguing one, but it doesn't provide you with a whole lot of definition about what an improvement or an enhancement is around a disposal site. And I did want to, there is a little bit of a, more of a clue perhaps in statute in ORS 459 as it speaks to regional disposal sites, which are sites that bring in more than 75,000 tons of trash from outside the immediate region. And so in that statute, it talks about how you can take money, the surcharge, they call it a surcharge in this statute, in 459.310. They say priority shall be given in expanding the monies to mitigation of adverse impacts on the area in and around the regional disposal site and related transfer stations located in the county, including but not limited to rehabilitation and enhancement of the area, development of alternate water systems, road construction and maintenance, and mitigation of adverse effects on wildlife and the environment. So that's, I think that gives a little bit better clue as to the kinds of improvements that have previously been contemplated, at least for regional disposal sites with this kind of, with these kinds of dollars. You know, I think clearly this is a question for the committee about how, you know, tipping fees and solid waste disposals is very clearly in statute a matter of local concern, but the dollars have always been meant to be sort of reinvested into the disposal system. And so I think the policy question in front of you really is, you know, can you at least temporarily provide some of those dollars to a related use of economic development? And that's the way I see the question here, is that we've got a really great opportunity to develop, to up what we call up zone Goshen. It's right now, it's a rural industrial classification, which means that buildings have to be limited to about 30,000 square feet. If we can up zone that to an urban level of zoning, industrial zoning, then we've got the opportunity for much larger buildings. Goshen is a, it's sort of a neat location in terms of it's immediately adjacent to I-5. It's immediately adjacent to Highway 58, which is the east-west designated freight route. There's a Bonneville power substation there. Really, it's got terrific potential for us in terms of job creation. But what is lacking is no good access to I-5 on the south end, and not good sewer infrastructure at this point. So, like I said, and like Commissioner Stewart said, the opportunity here is for us to be able to start to sock away some dollars. We would use those dollars for federal matching funds. We did Coburg Interchange Area Management Plan a couple years ago. You know, these are $20, $30 million projects. So finding that 11% match is tough. And certainly in this environment with the United States Congress, it's really tough. But this gives us an opportunity to actually come to the table with some dollars for those kinds of projects in this community.
All right,
so I'm happy
gentlemen.
To answer any questions.
I think there are some questions, so we'll start with Senator Olson. You
yes,
a couple
Mr.
questions.
Keller, this bill on face isn't really that bad, save for the fact that it's a 1,000% increase in the tipping fees, which is pretty astronomical. But this bill isn't specific to Lane County. This bill would be available to anyone in the state. Is that correct?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Olson, the first question, your comment about the 1,000% increase, the authority here is for up to $1 per ton now, or up to $10 per ton. So if the board were to take full advantage of that, I suppose it could be. And also note that it's just the authority to apportion dollars. So the tipping fee right now goes into a post-closure fund, capital development fund, future landfill fund, operations fund, those kinds of funds. This is just but one additional fund. So if they wanted to do some rearranging of existing dollars, they could do that under this bill. If it did lead to an actual tipping fee increase, like I said, in the dash one, we do have some sideboards on there so that it can't be in place eternally. I mean, once that RSIA designation goes away, so too must the tipping fee under the dash ones. Now, in terms of it is a statewide bill, but I am unaware of, we're fairly in the infancy of getting these RSIA designations. Lane County had the first one in the state with Goshen, but we were right alongside of Douglas County with, they had three sites that they were able to get RSIA designation for as we were going through the process. None of their sites are adjacent to a landfill or disposal site. And that's, I think that's the language that we're trying to suggest narrows this quite a bit, because the improvements have to be mutually beneficial for both an RSIA and a disposal site. And we've got, I think, a fairly unique opportunity for that in Goshen, in that literally on one side of the freeway, on the east side of the freeway, you have the Short Mountain Landfill, and on the west side and maybe a half a mile or a mile to the north is a community, well, it's an unincorporated community of Goshen. So it's a fairly unique place in terms of the state of Oregon where that situation, I think, could be, you know, sort of pass the straight face test with respect to this bill.
Follow up?
Do you have a follow up? Yep.
Yeah, you had mentioned Senate Bill 766, which I looked up, and of course, it's a state issue bill, and you were able to use that to your prerogative, which you can, and come up with a good idea for this. But the point I'm trying to make is the fact that there's going to be other municipalities that are going to look at this and say, you know, if we're let me back up a question here. Is there a distance that you have to be within the of a garbage of a landfill that, you know, you can use this? Or would it be a transfer station also?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Olson, I think disposal site does include a transfer station, so it could be. And, you know, we sort of contemplated that in the crafting of the bill, whether there should be some language about, you know, a radius around a disposal site that this could fall into. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. I mean, like I said, in the particular case of Goshen, I think pretty much all of Goshen probably is within a mile radius of the landfill. That could be something we could do. The idea here was to come up with this scenario that I don't think would necessarily be mimicked. But that said, I think, you know, the statute as it exists today does offer sort of an interesting opportunity for communities who say, well, yes, there could be improvements around, we could actually take tipping fee dollars and use them for improvements or enhancements around a disposal site. You know, my sense is initially this was probably for either tree planting or maybe some odor mitigation or visual screening kinds of improvements around disposal sites where those were deemed, you know, inappropriate for tipping fee dollars prior to that.
Mr. Stewart, what do your constituents think of this? Because you know that $10 fee or whatever it's going to end up at is going to be passed on in a garbage rate increase. So yes. What do your constituents think of that? Have you talked to them?
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Olson, every time that we have in the past dealt with tipping fees, it's very contentious and very difficult. I have not personally talked to my constituents about this specific item, but I would say that it would be very difficult. It's going to be a very difficult conversation for us to raise the tipping fee at that magnitude. Presently, right now, our tipping fee, I believe, is around $147 a ton at the present time. So to raise in an additional $9, it's a substantial increase and going to be a hardship. I believe the way that we're going to have to approach this and get their support is to show that the project, Goshen, and what we're going to do in Goshen is supported by the citizens to support this.
Mr. Stewart, the garbage that's collected and it gets put into this particular landfill, is it local or does it come from a long distance?
It comes from our entire county.
And from the entire county?
From Florence, clear from Florence up the McKenzie Bridge. This is our repository for everything that we're not able to recycle. It's where we it's the resting point for.
So I see your problem, because now you have to explain to the whole county that their garbage rates are going to go up. Is that true?
And that's going to be the conversation that we'll have to have when this item comes before us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator?
Alex or Faye, either one. I would just, if this were just a Lane County only bill, would you be okay with it if we narrowed it down just to meet you guys? I was under the impression that there was some discussion early on that that's what this was actually going to be.
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Hansel, I would support that. This is, we're trying to find a tool specific that we can use in Lane County to further our ability to, for economic development, job creation, and be able to take advantage of that specific site and find resources to be able to redevelop, whether it's transportation or sanitation. So I would be fine with that.
Chair Dingfelder and Senator Hansel, I think that's really what we were trying to do. When I very first visited with you about the bill, it was a statewide up to $10 per ton allocation. The language we added in the dash ones with the RSIA being mutually beneficial to an RSIA and to the disposal site, like I said, I don't think there's any place else in the state where that scenario actually exists.
So I have a follow-up question to this. So who sets that designation? Is that through DLCD, or is it through Business Oregon, or how is that designation? Is that locally that you apply for that? I'm just not familiar with the designation.
Chair Dingfelder, we did apply for it through a process that involves the department. There's a committee that's formed under Senate Bill 766, and it had the chair, the directors from,
right, I remember
DLCD,
that now. Yes.
DSL, yeah, ODOT, DEQ.
Okay.
We had to go in front of a panel, sort of describe the situation, and then they went away and discussed and came back and deemed us.
Okay. So what I think I'm going to do here and is let's take a look. What I want to get is check in with some of those agencies about, is this in fact, because if the language in here in fact is really you're the only site in the state where this applies, then we may not need to look at an amendment. But certainly I think we need some additional information on that. And so I'm going to say that my staff is going to work with you.
Sure.
So we can find that, because this is a new process from what I recall, because we just passed that last session.
Yeah.
And I think the questions here are, is this going to open up for other areas of the state? And if this isn't a need for other areas of the state, we want to keep it narrow so we can look and see where those areas bisect and see where, in fact, I'd like to see a map of, say, are there other areas where this would apply. Did you have any other questions?
No, I agree with you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, may I just add to that? Presently, I'm only aware of two designations. There were some designations down in the Roseburg area and the Goshen site, and I believe that the bill allows for 15 total designations. So Senator Olson's concerns or Senator Hansel's, today none of the sites meet, but there's potentially 13 more nominations,
right,
or site designations, and to say whether or not they would meet this requirement is, it wouldn't be prudent to say that.
Well, we will look into that, gentlemen. And final comment?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to put on the record that the statement by Commissioner Stewart about the $174 tipping fee, I heard a couple of gasps in the room. That is actually
147. I stated 147.
Sorry. And that is technically correct. That in the Lane code, it speaks to, that's the fee if you have an uncovered load. If you have a covered load, it's half of that. And so for most, it's a provision that is very rarely used. So really the sort of the common discussion is a $77 tipping fee, I think, is the actual tipping fee that that most people pay in Lane County. It's not in code, he's correct, but in practice, people, it's our way of making sure that we've got people covering their loads so that the loads are not spewing garbage as people are heading out to the transfer station. So,
Madam Chair,
yeah,
if I may,
mm-hmm.
This is probably a really good bill for you folks. But my concern, once again, is that it's going to be statewide. I can think of the Marion County landfill along in Woodburn that's right off the interstate, and they don't have an access to it. You have to circuitously get around it. But this, to me, would be look like, if it wasn't specific for Lane County, that they could use it to redevelop the east half of Woodburn or some significant area because of the fact that the landfill is by and it's a regionally significant industrial areas. So this could be used by many different entities as a tool, as you say, as a tool. So if you're trying to gear this for your use, you know, I would suggest that you specify your area or come back to us and say how many places can take advantage of this, because you're going to open up a can of worms and you're going to have people calling you from Ontario saying, hey, you're causing our garbage rates to go up. So anyhow, but this, I think, will work good for you guys. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other questions for these gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My staff, our committee staff, will be following up with you. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? Okay. So with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill, what is it, 248, and we're going to quickly reopen up the work session on Senate Bill 571. So Senator Haas would like to vote on this bill since it's carrying on the floor. We'll reopen up Senate Bill, the work session on Senate Bill 571, and Senator Olson will take a, oh, that's just you, isn't it? Or no, is it Senator? Okay.
Chair Dinkfelder, yes. I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing Senator Haas to vote for Senate Bill 571.
Okay,
you don't want to, though.
Senator Olson moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing Senator Haas to vote for Senate Bill 571. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the motion carries and the rules have been suspended. And Senator Haas, what is your vote?
Aye.
Okay, so so noted, Senator Haas votes aye. The motion still carries.
Did you tell him who's going to carry the bill?
He knows. And with that, anything else? Or
we're nope, that's perfect.
We will close the work session, change the vote on that, and Senator Haas is still carrying that very good bill, and he was here for the original discussion. So thank you, Senator Haas, for that. With that, we are up for our last bill today, which is Senate Bill 425. I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 425. Beth, can you please provide us with an overview?
Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 425 requires that the application to change place of use, point of diversion, or use made of water be evaluated to determine whether granting of application would result in loss of in-stream habitat for native fish or native wildlife in-stream reach not protected by the existing in-stream water right.
Okay, first we're going to hear from, this was Senator Krasinski, I think, put this in, and who's not here to testify. So we're going to hear from the bill proponents. And then we have somebody who requested, because he has an ill, sick child, to testify. And then we will hear from, typically what we do is we hear from people who have come from 100 miles or greater to go first. And then we hear from all the other folks who, by this list, almost all of them are from, are lobbyists in the building. So we'll make sure and hear from people that came from far away first. So with that, we'll have first Kimberly Priestley and Jim Myron come up, and then Jeff Stone. Is Jeff still here? Jeff, you're, why don't you come up all together? We can have a faux kumbaya moment here. No, maybe Jim should sit in the middle. No, you're all civil. I know that. So I know that you have, you're sorry to hear about your, so why don't you go ahead, and then we'll let Jeff go so he can sneak off and take care of his child.
For the record, my name is Kimberly Priestley, and I'm here on behalf of Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch is a river conservation group that has been working to restore and protect stream flows across the state since 1985. Today, I'm here to ask for your support of Senate Bill 425. In my testimony, I will first address the problem we are trying to address. I will also discuss some of the concerns and questions that we have heard, and then I will also discuss briefly some possible amendment language that we hope will help alleviate many of the concerns that you will likely hear today. So what is the problem we're trying to address? What we are trying to do is address a gap in the law that allows changes to existing water rights with any review to see if that will harm stream flows. Under Oregon law, a holder of a water right can change the place of use, type of use, or point of diversion as long as the change does not cause injury. And what that basically means is that the other water right holder would not get the water that they are using under their current right. And so where an in-stream water right exists, they enjoy the same protection as other water right holders. However, on hundreds of Oregon streams across the state where there's not an in-stream water right, there's nothing in the law that allows the department to simply review these applications to see if there will be an effect on the stream. This is so even if the proposed transfer would completely dewater a new segment of stream. And sort of, I have a little graph to sort of show a visual of that. So for instance, if you've got a farmer who has a point of diversion down here, and there's no in-stream water right here, if they were to change the point up here, you know, the effect could be as bad as dewatering this entire section of stream, and there's really just no way for the state to review that. Some folks have asked, give me a little bit more concrete example than that. And, you know, one that comes to mind where this could be a problem, I'm not asserting it is, but it could be a problem, is the Crooked River in Central Oregon. There you have a stream that in the late 1980s, the state applied for an in-stream water right. The application was denied, and it has not been resolved. So it's been sitting out there for 20-something years, and there's no in-stream water right on the stream. In the interim, steelhead have been reintroduced to the basin. Senators Merkley and Wyden have introduced legislation that would release water from Prineville Reservoir to try and rewater the stream. Irrigation districts, tribes, and NGOs are all working together to try and restore flows to that reach. And because there is no in-stream water right in place, this could, you know, if someone chose to do a transfer, say an upstream point of diversion transfer, this could undermine all that work. And, you know, I'm not asserting that people are lining up to do that. I'm just saying this is an example of where this type of protection would be incredibly helpful. You may ask why is it important that we address this today? Well, transfer applications are on the rise because most streams in Oregon are over-appropriated in the summer months. Most new uses are coming from either groundwater use, storage use, or increasingly these changes to old water rights to serve new uses. Transfer applications constitute roughly half the application pool in front of the Water Resources Department. And from our perspective, as reliance on these transfers grows, this gap is something that we should address. I may have said this before, but really what we're trying to do is just protect the status quo. That's all we're trying to do. That said, our bill has caused some concern, and a lot of questions have been raised to us, and so I thought I'd touch briefly on some of those. I think they're really good questions, and I'm glad for the discussion. One question is, would this bill allow an environmental review of the underlying right? So in other words, would it give, you know, the state a second bite at the apple at looking at the actual right that people are proposing to move? No, this bill would not allow this. That this bill is focused only on the change, any impact from the change of that water right. For instance, say you had a farmer, we'll call her Farmer Sue, and say that her water right already impacts 5 miles of stream. If her proposed change in use would have no different impact, it would still impact that same 5 miles of stream, this proposed bill would not kick in. However, on the other hand, if Farmer Sue changes her point of diversion, say, and her use now affects 10 miles of stream instead of 5 miles of stream, this bill would apply, and it would require review not of the underlying right and not of the impact to the original 5 miles of stream, but only to the impact of that additional 5 miles of stream that the transfer would cause. The other, you know, another question that we have heard from a number of folks is, this bill is too broad. Would you be open to amendments? You know, again, the intent behind this bill is actually very, very narrow. That said, we do want to address concerns that this is too broad. So are we willing to amend to narrow the scope? Yes, absolutely. You know, some of what we are considering, you know, people have actually thrown some pretty good ideas at us. For instance, removing the word wildlife appears to be key to some interests, and that's a very easy fix. Also, narrowing the standard from no loss of in-stream habitat for native fish and wildlife, which is causing really a lot of confusion, to something that either only applies to fish or is something akin to, you know, no impact to stream flows or no diminishment of flow, that would be wholly acceptable to us. And I think, at least from the conversations we've been having, a lot clearer to folks. Another suggestion that has been made to us, which we hope would really alleviate some of the major concerns, is that we limit it to only changes in points of diversion. And these would be stream flows where the point of diversion is upstream, sort of in the two examples I gave, that, you know, that is the type of transfer that would be asked for. According to the Water Resources Department, the applications for changes in point of diversion are approximately 10% of their transfer workload, and they get about 200 transfers a year. So this would be about 20 applications a year. So this would, I think, address worries about not only scope, but also concerns, real concerns, about the fiscal impact and also the workload impact to both agencies, to the Water Resources Department and to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So, you know, again, this is something that we would be willing to amend the bill to do. In my written testimony, I did talk a little bit about how many transfer applications would this impact, and there's various numbers in there, but I think I'll just not testify to that since, you know, as I indicated, if in fact we limit this to the point of diversion, we're really talking about 20 applications a year. So we're hoping that will alleviate a lot of the concerns. You know, and finally, we have had some folks a little concerned that this is, you know, coming out of the blue, that it's not been part of the water discussion, that somehow this concept is an outlier. And to that we would say no. This has been on the table for over 15 years. The Water Resources Department in 1998 presented a concept to the commission to, it wasn't the exact same concept, but it was very similar. It was to have a fish, basically a fish test on transfers, and that was aimed at endangered and threatened fish. While it didn't go forward at that time, it did put the issue on the table, and the conversation has been ongoing on this. Waterwatch did raise a similar concept, not the exact concept, but a similar one throughout discussions in the development of the integrated water resources strategy. And while the concept is not in the strategy, we would say that this idea, whether, you know, amended or not, fits in well with the strategy. So with that, I just wanted to thank you for the opportunity to have the discussion about this bill today. Again, our intent is a very, very narrow fix to what we see as an existing loophole to our current laws. We believe that the amendments would alleviate, or we would hope that the amendments would alleviate a lot of the concerns that you are going to hear today, and we would very much like to work with any of the stakeholders who are interested, as well as the agencies and any members of the committee. And with that, thank you very much.
Jim, did you want to add anything, or you're just there to buffer between Kimberly and Jeff?
My name is Jim Meyer, and with Water Watch of Oregon, I'm for the record, and I'm here to help answer questions, but I also wanted to just completely say that we're willing to sit down with any interested party to try and work through some amendments if that's what the chair chooses to do with this bill. Thank you.
Before we move over to Jeff, I just want to make sure we don't have any amendments in front of us, correct? Because for people that are listening, I want to make sure. But you're saying discussion among parties that are interested in this bill. You've been talking about it. Okay, I just want to be clear for the record. Okay. Why don't we have Jeff go be like point, counterpoint, and then we can ask questions. Then we'll let you go for the day. And
Madam Chair, yeah. Jeff Stone, Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I'm eternally grateful for you allowing me to jump ahead in line. We'll just go there. We are here to provide perhaps the start of a counterpoint to our friends at Water Watch. We strongly oppose Senate Bill 425. Water is a lifeblood to the nursery and greenhouse industry. We have shortages of water during the summer months, which is critical in growing plants and to maintain our economic engine, which is about $744 million a year. We oppose this strongly because of what it says. Not what it could be, but what it says. And this introduces a public interest test, and one that we think is just not the standard public interest test, but one that is far different from one that the Water Resources Department uses currently. It is our view, and we don't take it lightly, that it would end our ability to do water transfers in an over-appropriated area. The nursery and greenhouse industry, as you're well aware, is predominantly in the Willamette Valley. A lot of that water is already appropriated. This type of bill does get our attention because it is, we think, overly restrictive. And it is, I find it curious, but it's very rare for us to really get out and pound the table. This is a pound the table bill for us. And we're disappointed in it. We don't think it advances the discussion on water. And frankly, we think that this should be opposed. So you have extended remarks by me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jeff. And I did want to ask, if because you were talking about the bill as proposed, and I know that there are not amendments in front of us, but the concept that has been discussed, have you had a chance to talk with Kimberly about that?
We have not been approached by Water Watch. No, Madam Chair.
Okay. I will open up for questions now, and then we have a list of people that would like to testify on this. Senator?
I've got two quick questions, Ms. Priestley. Do you think that this Senate Bill 425 significantly changes Western water law?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, no, not at all. Again, we would argue that this actually isn't a public interest test, and the primary reason for that, it is not looking, it as written, not with the proposed amendments which change it, but as written, it does not allow a look at the underlying water right. Again, it's only the change in the use. And, you know, maybe I should have gone over some of those numbers that I put in my testimony because I think it's illustrative. We sort of seen this, it's sort of akin to an injury test as opposed to a public interest test. And if you look, in my testimony, I got some numbers from the Water Resources Department, and information from them indicates that since January 1 of 2010, of the 714 transfer final orders that were issued, only 11 were denied. We're thinking the same sort of numbers here. The intent of the bill and the language of the bill does not require a full review of every transfer in front of the agency. It's only if there were to be, as written, if there were to be a change that would result or, you know, that would impact stream flows, then that would be kicked over to ODF&W for review. So Jeff, I think, obviously disagrees, but I would say no.
And Anna, just to say, we were going to ask the department to come up also. I think it will be important. But I want to make sure we hear from the folks who have come 100 miles first in case we run short on time.
I do one quick follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
follow-up. I know that when you guys were working, and I appreciate your involvement, on the CRUST project for Eastern Oregon, I know that I think in some of the testimony and Water Watch was concerned that the irrigators, having signed, everybody signing it, that the irrigators would come to the state legislature, maybe do an end run, get something done that was not exactly within the framework of the CRUST. And I guess I'm wondering why you would think that this, you're doing this, would not be the same thing for them. Why wouldn't they feel that you're doing the same thing here?
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, first, I hope, it sounds like maybe I wasn't clear in my testimony on the Columbia. Just so we're, you know, just to set the record straight, I very much believe that the people who signed the CRUST will back that CRUST. And what I was saying is that folks, there might be some bills from folks outside of the signatories on the CRUST. So I in no way meant to imply that the people who signed that agreement would in any way undermine that agreement. And if that is what came across, I apologize to you and the members of the CRUST. But as far as this undermining the CRUST agreement, we would say no. In fact, it would probably advance the CRUST agreement. The sideboards of the CRUST agreement, as set forth by the governor's office, was to find water for farmers in a way that does no harm to fish. And this simply is trying to fill in a gap where harm to fish happens. And so we think it's entirely consistent with the CRUST agreement that we signed. You know, we have been one of the options that is discussed in the CRUST is a sort of pilot project for banking, which as I understand it will include some transfers, and we are supportive of that. This again, I think this gets back to your original question. Is this a wholesale change to Western water law? And we would say no. You know, as written and or as amendment, this is amended if we get that far. This really is just to sort of fix a loophole.
Any other questions, Senator?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Priestley, in your testimony on the first page, you said a change in diversion point from the downstream point on the upstream, or on the stream, to an upstream point.
Yes.
How about if someone is upstream and they want to change it to a downstream point? Is there that not significant?
Generally, that does not cause a problem for stream flows. It's just a change upstream. Because downstream, in fact, right, downstream changes of diversion are something that, you know, we generally support because that means that the water is coming down at a lower section of the stream. So you have that much more river that's watered before that water is coming out. So, yes, it would be very... If we do amendments, if it moves forward, it would be very specific. It would just be upstream points of diversion because that's where the harm to fish comes.
Even if the point source is only like a 20-foot change because there's a better area to draw water 20 feet downstream, it doesn't make any difference.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, that's actually an excellent question, and this is where the review comes in. It depends on what the standard would be, but for instance, if we narrowed it to just point of diversion changes and then had the standard be no loss of fish habitat, then what would happen in this instance is you'd kick it over to ODF&W, and ODF&W could say, yes, this will harm fish, or no, this won't harm fish. If the standard is no diminishment of flow, then that could actually in the end be more restrictive, because if there's a diminishment on a 20-foot section of stream, that might cause diminishment. But and again, one of the components of this bill, it's sort of like the injury analysis, that if in fact harm is found, then you can kick it over to ODF&W and they could evaluate it, say, for net benefits. And if there's a net benefit, then it could still proceed forward. But that's an excellent question.
Follow-up.
So you're saying that there would be a large fiscal for ODFW. In your statement, you said this would mean that approximately 50% of transfer applications would be affected if the review had to go to ODFW. So is there a large fiscal to ODFW to do this?
So, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, so the statement in the document is if we do not change the standard of review. So as of Friday afternoon, when we talked to the Water Resources Department, they said that a very strict reading of the statute would require that every application that did that would affect a stream with no in-stream water right would have to go to ODFW. And they did an overlay that they can talk to this better than I can, but they, as I understand it, they did an overlay of all the transfer applications over the streams that had an in-stream water right and figured out that about half of them don't have an in-stream water right, and so that's where the number came to. But if we change the standard to changes to points of diversion only, then the workload would be reduced to approximately 20 applications a year. So the idea in us, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to move forward with that amendment is it will significantly decrease the impact to the agencies, because we had a concern about that as well.
Follow-up. In your bill of 16 pages, yes, 17 times, it refers to whether the proposed use would result in a loss of in-stream habitat for native fish or native wildlife in a stream which reach that is not protected by an existing in-stream water right. You want an analysis of that in-stream habitat. Now, the question is, if a farmer was to go out and spend hundreds or thousands of dollars to get this analysis just for a point source diversion to move it, who's to confirm that this analysis is correct, and does the water resources have to pay an equivalent amount to a smart person to say that yes, it is correct, or no, it's not?
Senator Dingfelder, Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson. So the way this would work is, so on these 20 applications, depending on if it remains the fish review, but we're limiting it to the point of diversion, it would go to ODFW and they would make the determination. And so this should not cost the farmer anything. This would be a state review. ODFW is very well versed in doing these types of review. It's not as if it will be a new process. But if the farmer disagrees with what ODFW determines, on that particular application, there is a protest avenue available, and so they could legally challenge ODFW's review on that. So they would have recourse. It's not as if they wouldn't have recourse, if that was the question.
Madam Chair, if I may, one more question, and thank you for your time. It's my understanding that oftentimes a point of diversion is decided on quickly. We need to move this to make sure that we get our quantity of water. This bill would preclude any of that from ever happening, because they'd have to go through the analysis, they'd have to go through the review, and if ODFW wanted to get involved, they'd have to look at it. We could be talking months before this ever got done. And then let me ask you this question. Can someone outside of this review process come in and challenge the analysis like a professor or a biologist or a water resources folks? Could they challenge that analysis and argue the point so that the point source could not be moved?
Senator, or Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, again, very good questions. First of all, just to back up, the only applications that can go through a transfer process are certificated rights or rights that are almost certificated. In other words, they are fully developed rights. So it's not as in this point of a water rights life, they have already established their diversion. They've already developed it. They've put in the pipes. They've put in the diversion structure. So as far as a quick, it's maybe a different calculation than when someone is first building their water right and they're having to make maybe quick decisions. But then a second point is, all of these applications have to go through a process already, that they have to apply to the Water Resources Department. The Water Resources Department needs to review these applications to see if there is injury or enlargement. So they will already be looking at this application to see if it is harming other water right holders. This is part of the process. This review should not take that much more time. It is not, you know, I don't think it will play out that this would be sort of a stalling factor for the farmer.
And, Senator, we're going to hear from the Water Resources Department in a minute, okay. So we will ask them
fine.
That. So, So with that, I'm going to say thank you all for your testimony here today. I'm going to call up the three folks who are over 100 miles, and then Water Resources will be next on deck. And I'm going to also ask the Water Resources Department to walk us through the injury process, because I think it would be the injury test will be helpful. So first I'm going to call Craig. And I'm from Hale Farms. I'm sorry, I couldn't read your handwriting.
Reader.
J.R. Cook, who we all know well, and Don Rice. Gentlemen, if you can come up, and I'm going to ask you if you can be brief, especially if you have written testimony, because we'll start running out of time here. That would be helpful. J.R., you want to get started?
You bet.
Not wearing your suit and tie, though. We didn't recognize you from last time.
I apologize, but I had to dress quick because we found out about this at 8 this morning. So.
Well, welcome back, and thanks for coming out here.
Thanks. Thank you.
But you still look dapper. So.
Why, thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I appreciate the chance to be here. J.R. Cook, Umatilla Basin Water Commission Executive Director. Today I'm submitting just verbal testimony. I'll be very brief in opposition to Senate Bill 425. A couple of quick points. One thing I just want everybody to know, we use the transfer process in the Umatilla Basin, especially using Columbia River water, as a tool to address changes in water management scenarios on any given year, and Craig's going to touch on that just from his perspective on what he does at Hale Farms. But we do use this, and it is something that requires pretty quick turnaround in terms of getting a decision to get a transfer due to the fact that, you know, any given year water is different, so people have to move water around, and there has to be a way to accommodate that. I'm going to touch really on the three big keys. The first one is that, as you know, there is the Integrated Water Resources Strategy we just presented on Wednesday about the results of the Columbia River Umatilla Solutions Task Force, better known as the CRUST, and the fact that all 20 members did sign that. But both those efforts really require the fundamental component of that is getting the capacity and getting the guidance and framework set up to be able to address these more regional or these cumulative plans and implementation strategies on a basin-by-basin basis. And as the bill is currently written for Senate Bill 425, it looks at transfers on a case-by-case basis. So if we were to pass this bill, what it essentially do is it wouldn't allow us, it may unintentionally preclude us from looking at the cumulative effect of many transfers over time, that up to an overall benefit in a particular reach or basin, kind of what's being looked at by the strategy, but also what's being looked at with some of the banking ideas and some of the net environmental benefit strategies that we're looking at in the Umatilla Basin and upstream from us. And that's a pretty big impact when you're talking about not even getting to the point of implementing these strategies or potentially passing legislation that could preclude future options within them. But I do want to touch on, I think, one of the biggest concerns to me, and this is the reason I came down to testify, is that, you know, not only less than a week ago we were here testifying about 20 members signing a bill, and we do believe that Senate Bill 425, with its impact on the Columbia River, tests already the good faith agreement that we had entered into with the Columbia River Umatilla Solutions Task Force. The CRUST commitment to seeing the process through, a good faith agreement to minimize legislative proposals in 2013 session to those that reflect the spirit and recommendations of the CRUST, was agreed to by the members. If not in writing, there was the spirit of intent that we would go through the CRUST process in submitting legislation. And obviously this bill was pre-session filed, and we understand that, but the CRUST was moving forward when this bill was filed, and that's concerning to us. So we are in opposition to this simply because of that fact, and just due to the fact that we'd like to see some of these larger integrated efforts get off the ground before we start drafting or presenting legislation that could preclude them. So I appreciate the time.
gentlemen, and thank you for coming over here today. And just for the record, please identify yourself.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Craig Reeder. I'm general manager at Hale Farms. And I provided for you an example project, which, while not directly tied into our opposition of Senate Bill 425, I think it's important that while I'm opposed to Senate Bill 425, I'm not opposed at all. Matter of fact, I'm in support of in-stream restoration and fish flows. So an example of a project that we've done as far as net environmental benefit goes, two things have happened to me this year for the first time ever. One is I got called an environmentalist by a neighbor, and the second was is that a person from NIMS said, and I quote, "And we thank you for your effort and investment to protect salmon." I've never been told those two things before, and I was this year. So let me outline really briefly this project that we're working on. Upper right-hand corner is a yellow dot. That's the point of diversion from the Columbia River. There we went in 4 years ago, and we did the first conserved water right in the state of Oregon for ag use, where we actually put water back in stream, several acre feet and several CFS. From there, I've drawn a line that you can see just to the left of System 2. That was all new infrastructure that cost somewhere between $3 and $4 million. That infrastructure facilitated us, while we're still ready, willing, and able, to pump 25% less water out of one of the main critical groundwater areas in our basin. And for that, we have done a phase three to trim that out. And we actually, the picture on the left is being completed, actually was completed last week, which is a voluntary improvement of fish screens to meet NIMS standards of no take on fish screens. So it's very important as far as a culture that your water users, I'm a water user, obviously, that we articulate our position on, you know, we care. All right, this isn't, and I've dealt with this stereotype a lot in the last 18 months, that it's just another big ag user with another big water grab. And that's absolutely not what we're about. I work for Hale Farms. I don't consider Hale Farms big ag. And I also, on the weekends and any other time, I'm the sixth generation on a dryland wheat farm, actually neighboring Senator Hansel's. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud that not to be considered a big ag. Nothing against big ag, but I'm not big ag here asking for a whole bunch more water. That being said, we're in a area that is water challenged, that was over appropriated, and we're making strides on how to conserve more water and deal with that over appropriation. And the fact is, I just articulated to you, reverse that, by doing projects like this where we're actually putting water back in stream. One of the key things that we use in that process is the temporary transfer. And both temporary and permanent transfers allow us to stretch our rotation out so that we can maximize, get the highest and best use out of the water, instead of parking that water on one piece of ground and that one point of diversion, which locks us into potentially some lower value crops. We can't raise potatoes and root crops every year on every acre, or potentially wood. It's bad for the ground. We have to rotate that around. One of the tools we use to do that with is a temporary transfer. If the issue is protecting upstream material points of diversion changes that materially affect flows, I really believe that there's other ways to do that. I'm in support of doing that if we can identify the specific instances and work some way to mitigate that or some way to minimize the damage. My friend here to the right of me would knock me in the head if I said, hey, I want to take 100 CFS out of the Columbia, move that upstream, and take 100 CFS out of the Umatilla. That's a no-brainer. You just don't do that because there's a big difference, and that would have a negative impact. So if that's what we're trying to stop, we can address that. This bill is broad. It's a very useful tool, the temporary and permanent transfers are, for both transferring point of use and point of appropriation in what we do in maximizing the water that we have and mitigating the curtailment that we've seen over the years and increasing the environmental benefit in our area. So with that, I'll entertain any questions, but we're in opposition of this, and again, not because we're in opposition of increasing stream flows or helping to manage fish habitat, but because this is too broad of a brush, and it's the wrong avenue to pursue to fix what we're really trying to fix here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reeder. Mr. Rice?
Sure. For the record, Don Rice with Greenwood Resources, Boardman Tree Farm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to be before you today. We've, at the Greenwood Tree Farm at Boardman, we've supported the Umatilla Basin Recharge Project, pumping water through our system to provide to the recharge project. We've cooperated with the Governor's Solution Task Force and in seeking ways to optimize the use of the water. And we're prepared to be a test case in one of the concepts utilizing temporary transfers to make better use of water. Through our sustainable harvesting process at the tree farm, we harvest year-round and we plant seasonally. And as a result of that, we have a certain number of acres each year that is in between the harvest and planting cycle. And we're looking to do temporary transfers this year to make better use of that water. And we feel that the process is proposed in this bill would make that process potentially very difficult to implement. So we would encourage you not to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions? Senator Hansel.
Craig, what were you doing at 8 o'clock this morning?
I was getting ready to plant peas, Senator. Sorry, I didn't follow protocol.
You can say senators.
Senators. I was getting ready to plant green peas.
So you gave up your whole day of farming because you heard about this bill. And I want to ask you the same questions that I asked the other people. Do you feel that this changes Western water law? And then secondly, do you, you know, I guess I already know the answer because I think JR answered it, but the whole CRUST partnership type of thing, if it tends to undermine it.
Yeah, I think what this essentially does in the way I read it and the way it's written today is that it more or less provides, for those streams that don't have an in-stream water right, it more or less provides an in-stream water right and gives that priority, gives that a priority date over anything else in the stream. And, you know, with all due respect to the comment, you know, not costing, that this process won't cost the farmer anything, there is nothing involved with the water rights process today, and I'm not saying not needed, but there's nothing involved in the process today that's not time consumptive and very expensive. And that's necessary because it's a precious resource. However, any change and any time you enter a new public comment period or you enter a new review period, we do spend money. We spend money to make sure we're doing the right thing. We spend money with attorneys. We spend money with consultants to get these fish screens done. We had to go through a NEPA consultation and a NIMS consultation, which aren't bad things, but they're expensive and they're time-consuming. And on a wholesale change in a point of diversion or a wholesale change in what you're doing or a new water right, that process is there. And to change a point of diversion permanently, you have a public comment period, so it's there. So there are built-in ways to comment and to provide, you know, public interest on the process. But so the way I see the way this is written is that, yeah, it essentially inserts an in-stream water right or gives that a priority by its process. It gives that a priority over more or less any other water rights, which is a wholesale change in the way things are done today. As far as the CRUST process goes, the CRUST process, I thought, was a wonderful process. My understanding of the CRUST process is that none of the people that signed the CRUST document, I was one of them, was going to be active in the legislature this year. So this bill, I knew it was out there. I knew the concept was out there. My understanding, it wasn't going to get a hearing. So I was very surprised that it got the hearing that it got today. So that was a kind of an unfortunate shock to me. That being said, I hold the people that on the CRUST in the highest, you know, regard as far as their participation in that process, and I don't want to be disrespectful to any of them. But this hearing today was a shock to me, as why, you know, I was planting peas this morning and been down here, but I didn't have time to go home and change into my super suit. So I apologize, I don't have a suit and tie, but this is a big deal to us, so we kind of scrambled the fighters to come down here.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time out of your busy schedules to come down here.
Do you have a question? Okay. Gentlemen, anyone can answer this. Is this bill in any way, shape, or form, can it be amended to meet any of your requirements?
If the mission is to, no, is the senator. If the mission of the bill is to protect, no, it's what we're trying to do there. If you're trying to protect damaging upstream changes and points of diversion, I believe that there's ways to do that. Both in the growers, the water users, and the conservation community can identify those, and we can really work towards, you know, not drying up any streams. The temporary transfer and the process that's in place right now, in my opinion, and I will definitely yield to the Water Resource Department, but is very adequate in both addressing public interest and the contested case process and how material changes or material damage, you know, can be averted. From my experience, which is extensive with that whole process and with the contested case process. So with all due respect to the process and the people involved, I think the process we've got in place is pretty thorough. And this really puts one of our key tools in jeopardy in the temporary and permanent transfer process, members of the senators.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate your input. With that, we're going to have the Water Resources Department come up and walk us through the injury process, try to address some of the questions that have been heard here. And then next up, we'll have Jerry Schmidt, Malia Kapilis, and I think then we have Michael Hunter after that. The folks who are in the building on a regular basis, you will be last, and we'll ask you to be brief. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Dwight French from the Water Resources Department. I supervise our transfer activity. I'm the Water Rights Services Division Administrator. I've got a few comments that I wanted to share with you, and we'll touch on injury and any other questions you may have for me. As Kimberly outlined, a transfer application, or some states call it a change application. In Oregon, we call it a transfer application. It's filed with the department if you want to make a change in your point of diversion, if you want to move or add a well location, change a type of use, place of use, or any combination of these things. And you can file one application to cover several water rights if you want to. There are several different types of transfer processes. There's the permanent process, which is the most common. I've given you a little outline of the process there. There was quite a bit of talk by Mr. Reeder about the temporary process. The temporary process takes about 30 to 45 days, or excuse me, 3 to 4 months. 3 to 4 months. And the permanent process is a 6 to 8 month process, or about twice as long. I've put an asterisk on the flow chart to show where the bulk of the review, if this bill were to pass, where the bulk of the review would take place. An in-stream water right does one or more of three different things. They protect fish or fish habitat. They minimize the effects of pollution and maintain recreational uses. We've got about 1,000 in-stream water rights that were filed by any one of three different agencies. ODFW, here to my left is Rick Kepler with Department of Fish and Wildlife. In-stream water rights were also filed by DEQ and the Parks Department. Our 10-year average for transfers being filed is 230 transfers a year. Kimberly used a number that is also fine with me. It's 200 a year. That's our 5-year average. The numbers have been going down. I think that's mainly due to the economy. Things have been picking up here recently, and we might get back up to the 10-year average of 230. Let's see.
And so I do have a question on this, just to jump here. So back up, you said the review that you start is where the bulk of what Water Watch was proposing. Jumping up two boxes, injury review form sent to Water Master, groundwater staff, and ODF&W is appropriate. So, Rick, I'm going to ask you, when you're reviewing that, if there is not an in-stream water right already, are you looking at your maps for fisheries, for habitat, and saying, boy, you know, this is something that we might want to look at? Can you tell me a little bit how that process works when you're reviewing at that point?
I can't charge anywhere. For the record, my name is Rick Kepler. I'm with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm the manager of the water quality quantity section. Basically, when we're reviewing transfers, whenever there's an in-stream water right, then we work with water resources to do a review of those if they injure an in-stream water right. If there is no in-stream water right in that area, we don't really step in and do anything with the transfer, whether it's moving upstream or moving downstream at that point. So the major point we have there is whether it needs to be a screen in place to prevent fish from going down the diversion. So.
Okay, so just to be clear, so this, you're saying the two boxes down, that's where that additional review would occur. And can you, there's been a lot of discussion about additional burden costs, timing. Do you have any estimate about how much more time that would take? I'm assuming you'd have to consult with ODFMW on that and look at their habitat maps. Can you talk a little bit about that in your estimate? I know you don't, I know you haven't prepared a fiscal yet on this bill, but if you could speak to that.
Yes, Chair Dingfelder. So all of our transfer applications would have to be looked at, get an extra review if this bill were passed, because we would have to see whether or not the change was occurring within a reach of stream that is protected by an in-stream water right. That review may take, up to an hour on the outside to gather the information and do that review. If the review is needed by ODFMW, then we would send some amount of review criteria that would help ODFW with their review. I'm not sure what that might look like yet. But and then when the information came back from ODFMW, and Rick can talk about how long that might take, then my staff is going to review that information and fold that into the transfer review. If it's in the permanent process, like I have the flow chart here, then it's before the draft preliminary determination. We're going to want to let the applicant know the results of that review and what might need to be done about that if there's anything. Okay. So when you look at the 200 or 230 applications a year, we roughly estimate that it may take up to half an FTE to deal with that. Beyond that, there is, we think maybe a rulemaking would be needed, because there's lots of terms in the bill that we're not familiar with, then we would want to become more ready to deal with those terms, like the native fish and native wildlife. Those aren't terms we normally use. And there was a little exchange with one of the commenters earlier about, what if there was a protest filed by a third party who thought either ODFW or our department got this part of the review wrong? That, unfortunately, the protest is very expensive, because oftentimes DOJ has to get involved with us on any legal, issues. And so I don't know how much that might cost. But right now, the transfer process is based on injury, which is just only impacts to existing water rights. So there's no fish or public interest review other than what Rick commented on about injury to an in-stream water right, which really only happens if there's a POD change that moves upstream within an in-stream water right reach. And then they're going to check it out to see if there's a new fish screen that needs to be involved. That doesn't happen or slow us down very much.
Rick, can you just briefly give us your estimate on how much time you think review time? I mean, I heard half FTE here. I know you don't have a lot of staff. Do you have any sense of...
Chair Dingfelder, I guess going back from experience, mm-hmm. I think the estimate of about 20, 25 a year is probably right, okay? And the question would be whether we would analyze these like we do with most of the other things with professional judgment and existing data, which is why we've done most of the in-stream water rights that have been injured, or were we going to have to do a more extensive analysis? we could probably handle most of the, with professional judgment, as long as there's no glitches, we could probably handle that within our current budget. However, if we were to have to do an in-stream water rights study of some kind, in-stream water study, then we would have to, it would become more costly.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. I think Senator Olson has a question.
Mr. Kepler.
And then we'll move on to the other
witnesses. Kepler, if a farmer was to hire a professional that did the analysis, would you also have to hire an outside consultant to determine if their consultant was correct, or would you just work inside your own realm and with your own FTEs?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson. What we do, we have an in-stream flow specialist on staff, and they would either do the analysis, or if somebody, a third party, had already done the analysis, that person would review the analysis essentially to see if it looked right, and we would encourage, if somebody's going to do that, to work with that person as they were doing the analysis. We do that all the time already, so.
Follow up? And that would be, because you're talking in-stream flow analysis, but would that also include the native fish and the aquatic species that they're talking about in this bill?
Chair Dingfelder, yes, Senator Olson, it would.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. I'm sure there'll be some other questions, but I want to make sure we hear from other folks who'd like to testify, so appreciate you being here today. Jerry Schmidt, Malia Kapilis, and also I'm going to call up Nikki Iverson. Jerry, actually, you are in the building. And then Bill Hout will be after that. Okay. Okay, why don't you go ahead and get started? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I am here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. This is the men and women involved in the industry and the manufacturers and suppliers that work with water underneath the ground. I'm not going to say very many words today. I'm going to turn it right over to Malia. Malia Kapilis is well qualified. She also chairs our Government Affairs Committee for the Oregon Groundwater Association. She is a principal in the Pacific Hydrogeology. She's been a chair of the Groundwater Advisory Committee for the Water Resources Department, a principal in her own firm. So with that, I want to give it to her because she and her business does transfers. That's her line of business as a consultant. So I think it would be helpful to hear from her, and if you have any questions, she would probably be able to answer it since this is her bailiwick.
Thanks, Jerry. And I have to ask you, are you related to Sue?
Yes.
Tell her I said hi.
I will.
Yeah. And actually, you want to move one of those away from you because we're going to get, you just need one mic. You're going to get a feedback on there. So thank you, and thank you for coming here.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee, I will try to make this as short and brief as possible so as many people that are here have a chance to testify. I am here wearing very many hats. I am here representing
the Oregon. Can you say your name again? I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I probably got you a little bit off.
You did.
By asking you a question. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yes, my name is Malia Rosner Kapilis, and yes, I am related to Sue Kapilis, and I reside at 18487 South Valley Vista Road, Molino, Oregon, 97042, and I am here wearing very many hats today. I'm here representing the Oregon Groundwater Association, where I serve on the board on not only the Government Affairs Committee, but I am also the chair of the Technical Committee, and also the chair of the Ethics Committee. I am also here representing my consulting firm, Pacific Hydrogeology, and our clients. We do an awful lot of water rights work for our clients, both transfers, temporary transfers, you name it, we do it. Our clientele ranges from nurseries, vineyards, to the mom-and-pop small farms. As he said, I've also served on the state's Geological Map Advisory Committee. For 6 years, I was chair of that committee for 2 years, and I am currently the co-chair of the state's Geological Map Advisory Committee, where we decide annually where the funds for the state geologic mapping should go. And right now, those decisions are pretty much based on water concerns and water issues. So, first of all, I'd like to state that I am against this bill. First of all, this bill does not distinguish between groundwater and surface water transfers. It targets everything and anything. And It's already been pointed out that this also includes temporary transfers, which are a key tool in the toolbox for trying to use water in this state. I'd like to point out that currently, Oregon Fish and Wildlife, they have the ability to commit or comment and protest on any transfers addressed by this bill. If there is a concern that the transfer will cause a problem, they can speak up. Fish and Wildlife also has the ability to apply for in-stream rights on any reaches that they have serious concerns about. We also have grave concerns that this bill opens the potential door for frivolous protests to be filed. It's not uncommon in our business that we get a neighbor or somebody who is angry, and all they want to do is just make somebody's life miserable, and the fastest way that they can do that is if they're willing to spend the money, they can file a protest. We also feel that this bill would unnecessarily increase costs and place additional burdens on both Water Resources Department and the applicant and potentially Fish and Wildlife, and this is consistent with what we just heard from Dwight and Fish and Wildlife. We also feel that the state's current integrated water resources strategy is supposed to be able to give equal weight and consideration to all beneficial uses, and we see that this bill, no matter how it is amended, has the real potential to shift that balance to give greater considerations to ecological uses. And I would like to emphasize that if we want our integrated water resources strategy to work, we cannot allow this bill, because this bill defies the intent of that strategy. And as we go forward to work through our state issues and our water issues, we're going to need absolutely every single tool we can to make everything work, both for us, both for the farmers, and for the fish. We cannot take one tool out of the toolbox. We need them all. I'd also like to point out that right now transfers are down, and we have seen that in our work as well. With that, does anybody have any questions?
We'll hear from Nikki first, and then we'll see if there are any. So thank you very much for coming here today. And Nikki, we have your written testimony, so I know you will be relayed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Nikki Iverson for the record. I work for the City of Hillsborough Water Resources Manager, but we also manage the Joint Water Commission, who serves drinking water to approximately 380,000 to 400,000 people in Western Washington County. Also, just a few points I did want to make was that this bill, in my mind, is trying to fix a problem that essentially doesn't exist. It also creates a fiscal impact on both the Water Resources Department, ODF&W. And I do think that if the supporters of this bill were serious about making it a narrow, defined thing, that we would have seen amendments, or it would have been originally drafted that way. Personally, the Joint Water Commission went through a point of diversion change, which included an extensive process with ODF&W, and it took about a year and a half to get through that process. We were required to move our point of diversion from our fish persistence review through our permit extension for municipalities. So for us, it is a really duplicative process. But in addition to that, it still took another year and a half to get through that process and the costs associated with that. So I really don't feel that this is going to add much value to the state. Place of use change, in my mind, really doesn't have a large impact on fish and wildlife. It's really the point of diversions that could be a potential impact that the state already has authority to comment and make adjustments based on those changes. And also, I do want to say that it definitely does change Western water law. We have been going through the same experience on fish persistence, and we negotiated and agreed to that, but essentially we have become junior to many in-stream water rights in the state, or flows that are actually much higher than that. And so if you're looking to go down this path, I think it's a much larger discussion, and there's a lot of things in this bill that are really vague, and it's hard to know exactly where it's going to go and how it should be defined. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Nikki. Any questions for any of the panel? Thank you very much for coming here today and sharing your testimony. I'm going to call, Michael Hunter, is that right? And also Bill Hout, gentlemen. And then we'll have sort of the building regulars that'll come up, and I know they'll all be brief so we can get out of here in time. Thank you for coming here today. Appreciate you coming by, and nice to see you again.
Thank you. Yep. My name is Michael Hunter, and I'd like to ask you a little leniency in or the tangent that I'm actually approaching this from, so I'm not really a water right owner, we'll put it that way. But I have an interest here. I thought it was pretty good when they first introduced this thing that they did confirm that this has been previously rejected, almost per se. And I also had trouble with her support when she keep using the word can and could and hope, and I'm thinking, I like people to defend what they say and be specific, and I didn't see that in this at all. And my reason for thinking this thing is it's a vote no on this particular measure, please. I think it is way over-encompassing. It probably opens up a whole bunch of avenues for legal challenges. Now, while the Water Resource Board has an onboard analysis, private water rights people don't. They have to hire specialists. So there is a real fiscal problem when there are challenges. This particular bill specifies almost in every section, this is applicable to any change in point of diversion. It doesn't clarify upstream, downstream, or anything. And it is based on the fact that there can cause a loss to in-stream habitat for fish or wildlife. Been mentioned it's in there frequently, and yet the supporters of it have failed to really bring it up, that that is how they're measuring this damages, if you would. And it's interesting that this is for streams not protected by existing in-stream water rights, and yet it treats it like there is an in-stream water right and wrongfully places later designation of benefit use at a higher priority than existing water rights, even for temporary changes. So we have no reason to have now an in-stream water right. Every stream will be affected by the same concept, damage to habitat for fish or wildlife, and it will have a priority over any existing water rights regardless. One of the biggest issues I have with this thing is that there is an exemption, and that's for municipalities versus private people, and that's unequal legislation. All water right users have the same rights. And kind of as a outside structure, the Water Resource Board mentioned that this could also be based on a pollution. I'd like to introduce, for the record, a statement that's just come out. This is a U.S. Supreme Court ruling regarding the use of the word pollutants. And the U.S. Supreme Court decision stated, defines the term of discharge of a pollutant to mean any addition of any pollutant to navigable waters from any point source. So no pollutants can be added unless they are brought in from an outside source. That's a very issue hard to determine if you're just using regular water, irrigating, or feeding your livestock and stuff. What is the definition of a pollutant if you don't consider this U.S. Supreme Court definition? And in the final part of it, I guess, I basically representing recreational users. So this is a tangent I mentioned, but it's a small step if you can regulate existing water rights to water activities. I'm a vice president of Willamette Valley Miners, and we are a water resource activity abyss. And I'm concerned that we might be just a small step away to be considered to be banned from this if they can take water rights away from existing water rights.
Thank you for coming here today and sharing your concerns. We'll hand it over to
Chair Dingfelder, committee members. For the record, my name is Bill Hoyt. I am the immediate past president of the Oregon Cattlemen Association and currently serving as the legislative chair. I'm here quite often, as some of you have noted. We are opposed to Senate Bill 425 for several reasons. One, and I'll be very brief, we think it's way too broad, the scope of it. Takes in so many different aspects of how water is used and how the changes might be. And from a small producer, if I have a really hard winter, a lot of snowpack, and we get a tremendous amount of runoff, and my diversion point is severely eroded by winter runoff, I've got to make a change. And if I'm going to make a change, now I have to go through this entire process to get that done. It seems really burdensome on small producers as well as large. We think the public interest test is overreaches. We think that it does change Western water law, and we are in general opposed to it because we think that the existing water right and the way they're administered in Oregon, there are the protections that are sought by this bill are already in place. So we would support we would like speak in opposition. Thank you.
Thank you both gentlemen for coming here today and sharing your concerns. And with that, we'll call up. We have a few more folks that would like to testify. Tom Wolf, Katie Fast, and April Schell. It's Schell, right? Or Schnell?
Schnell.
Schnell. Which means fast in German. There, Schnell. It's back from my 10th grade German days. I can't believe I remember that. Whoever wants to go first.
Chair Dingfelder, committee members. For the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, the largest cold water conservation group in the United States with 150,000 members nationwide and 3,000 here in the state of Oregon. We're very unique in that we're not just conservationists, we're also fishermen. 99.999% of our group are fishermen. We consider the preservation of wild fish as our mission, of the watersheds as our mission, and partially because we care about that environment, but partially because we love the fish. In 1959, a small group of people led by George Mason on the banks of the Austable River decided that the state of Michigan wasn't doing enough to start to protect wild fish in the state of Michigan, and from that basis, the organization Trout Unlimited started and grew to the size I mentioned before. In the mid-1990s, we realized that in-stream flow was a major problem, and we looked around for a solution, and like many places and many people in the last 160 years, we looked to the state of Oregon for solution, and we saw a small group called Water Watch, and we realized we loved what they were doing. So we took the concept of Water Watch, and we took it to almost all the rest of the states that we do work in the country under either the Western Water Project or the Eastern Water Project to work on in-stream flow. And I'm here to, as I hope my preamble points out, to support Senate Bill 425. I believe that it's a very specific loophole that Water Watch wants to close. I believe that Water Watch and Ms. Priestley have demonstrated that they're willing to work with a large group of stakeholders to write amendments so that they can close this. And it's, you know, I've grown up to the state my entire life. I'm a sixth generation Oregonian whose many of my cousins farm in the East Fork of Dairy Creek. And I'm the grandson of a farmer who unfortunately lost his farm during the Depression. And I understand the needs of farmers, the needs of ranchers, the needs of municipality for water, but I also realize the need of fish for water. And what Water Watch and Trout Unlimited have done with their projects on in-stream flows have greatly increased the flow for fish, for wildlife, and for the watershed itself. So I ask, please support this bill. Please give it a chance. Please work on the amendments with Water Watch. Please bring all the stakeholders into the group. Don't let it die. I think it has a great possibilities. It can be made more narrow. It can be made to work. Please, please, please make it work. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Hi, good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Just recently, Oregon's water law celebrated its 100-year anniversary, and unfortunately, we believe Senate Bill 425 undermines the basis of Western water law by adding a new analysis to the injury test, and that is the public interest analysis that you've heard about today. You know, you've also heard, I think, some good testimony from actually real people that are managing water on the ground and how the ability to use transfers is critical to our ability to manage water and keep agriculture viable. As our streams have become fully appropriated, transfers are the only way that we can move water from field to field to area to area in a way that's not impacting our neighbors and the resource. However, if or with Senate Bill 425, it creates a lot of uncertainty for those applicants. It's written very vague and broad. And I think as folks enter into the process, they don't really know what the impact's going to be as they kind of put their application forward. The language is much broader than native fish. It goes into habitat for wildlife, not defined in the legislation. Very concerned about what that would mean in terms of analysis on transfers. And it also brings in temporary transfers that are usually time limited and have a quick turnaround process that can be slowed down and really impact someone's ability to utilize the water in the irrigation season. I think the concern that you're hearing from the water users is this change in Western water law that they see and would hope that this bill does not move forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Sorry, my senator was making jokes.
Wasn't Katie.
Not at
I'm
you.
Not concerned.
Yeah. Just ignore the man behind the curtain there.
Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, I'm April Snell, Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And you have a letter before you, and I won't read that, but I will mention the groups that are on there, some of which you've already heard, but others weren't able to get on the list today. Association of Oregon Loggers, Oregon Seed Council, League of Oregon Cities, Oregon State Grange, Oregon Association of Nurseries, Oregon Cattlemen's Association, Oregon Wheat Growers Association, Special Districts Association of Oregon, Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and OWRC are all voicing our opposition to Senate Bill 425. So you've already heard from Ms. Fast as to our concerns as to this bill potentially upending Western water law as we know it and the 100 years plus that water law has worked in Oregon. We don't claim that it's a perfect system, but it is a system that has worked very well. And the rights that were referred to earlier as fully developed rights, those are the rights that would be subject to impacts from this bill. Those are water rights that have been put to beneficial use by their water right holder in a manner in accordance with Western water law. And this could potentially change all of that. It would create a large number of uncertainty and could potentially harm or hinder collaborative projects that could actually benefit the environment, as you've already heard earlier. There are 11 separate statutory changes listed in this bill. That is not a simple bill. That is not closing a loophole or maintaining a status quo. That is setting up an entire new regime that, as you've heard from the Water Resources Department and Fish and Wildlife, they don't currently have that system in place, and they don't have the resources to administer that. We are concerned that in addition to impacting water users, that this would impact the department's ability to carry out their other statutory water management functions. And because of that, and as Katie has mentioned, transfers are an extremely valuable water tool. Irrigation districts, which are local government entities throughout the state, they are water managers for the benefit of all the water users within their districts and have to be stewards of those water resources. And if they had to look at each individual transfer as potentially impacting some unknown type of wildlife, it would have an immediate and detrimental impact on both the districts and their water users, which would have a trickle-down effect of further impacting Oregon's economy and the food and fiber that's produced with the water that folks use with water rights based on the prior appropriation doctrine. So with that, I'll pause there and just indicate again we are very concerned about Senate Bill 425 and urge you to not move any further on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for panelist members? Okay, thank you very much. And Sue Marshall is the last person signed up. Anybody else like to testify on this bill? Don't all rush up at once. Okay, Sue, you are last up on bat there.
Thank you. Yep. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today on behalf of the Rogue Riverkeeper and the Tualatin Riverkeepers. They've both submitted letters electronically, so I'll be very brief. In-stream flows are very important to water quality. They go hand in hand. My organizations are concerned about that. We recognize the value of these transfers, but believe that Water Resources Department should have the ability to evaluate the potential impact on in-stream flows for the new uses and at their new locations. Most of Oregon's streams are over-appropriated, and we think it's prudent to evaluate the impact when these changes are made. We would also support the efforts to narrow and clarify the language in the bill, as others have said. And I would echo Tom Wolf's, please, please, please give this bill a chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Any questions for Sue? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 425. Anything, Beth, that we need to follow up on? Okay. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.